Coming up on Only a Game, you want a rivalry? How about the aquatic equivalent of the cattlemen versus the sheepherders? But first, I'm joined by Charlie Pierce for our look at the week's news. Hello, Charlie.
Cows and sheep in the pool?
Just stay tuned. It's going to be brilliant. We will pick up on our rivalry theme in just a few minutes, but I want to start with Thursday's NBA draft. Kentucky center Karl-Anthony Towns was not a surprise first pick when Minnesota chose him. Did anything in the draft surprise you?
The chalk held pretty much. I'll tell you what really alarmed me, Bill. I can't tell you how many players in that draft had fathers who I covered when they played college basketball. It's really distressing.
I was kind of hoping you'd say you were at least a little surprised by some of the outfits that the drafted players were wearing. I mean, the sparkly shoes especially.
Well, Kelly Oubre was wearing footwear from Mars. I don't know where he picked those up. We've come a long way, though, from when they all used to dress like extras from Warren Beatty's movie Bugsy.
The Golden State Warriors won the championship with a so-called small ball lineup, but two of the top three picks in this draft were big men. Is this a return to the land of the Giants in the NBA, or are Towns and Philadelphia pick Jahlil Okafor just better than anybody else?
That's the case. If you're a basketball coach, you can't let somebody like Karl-Anthony Towns get by, and Okafor is not far behind him. These were just the best two players in the draft.
The New York Knicks fans love to boo at drafts especially, Charlie. And this year, the object of their disapproval was a Latvian named Kristaps Porzingis, taken by New York at number 4. Porzingis said later they don't want a European on their team. I think maybe he just hasn't paid enough attention to New York Knicks fans in the past, right?
Yeah, that's the point. They just don't want anybody on their team until they're on their team, and then they really like them.
Pete Rose, banned from baseball back in 1989 for gambling when he was a manager, applied again for reinstatement this year, Charlie. I guess he figured new commissioner, what the heck. And I guess he didn't figure on the unearthing of a notebook belonging to one of Rose's former associates in which, oops.
Yeah, somebody has been holding this particular trump card for quite some time before leaking it. It showed that he was gambling on baseball while he was playing, which is, of course, the absolute death sentence.
Yeah.
So I think this was a secret thing somebody kept in a drawer until they really needed it.
One Only a Game listener has suggested the following solution. Allow Rose into the Hall of Fame because his play on the field warrants it, but wait until after he dies so that nobody has to listen to his acceptance speech. What do you think?
Do you not want to hear his acceptance speech? I'm dying to hear his acceptance speech.
Charlie, you might be interested to know that when FIFA President Sepp Blatter announced back on June the 2nd, and I quote, "I have decided to lay down my mandate at an extraordinary elective Congress," he was not, in fact, resigning. What do you suppose he was doing?
He was laying down his mandate, Bill. It's right there on the table. You can go look at it.
And nobody picked it up, so he doesn't have to leave.
That's right. People just sort of left it there. So, first of all, Bill, that question is entirely premised on Sepp Blatter having some form of integrity, which we all know he doesn't have.
Apparently, at issue is whether a so-called convincing candidate has emerged to replace Sepp Blatter. Maybe you and I could help by brainstorming some names that would do a better job than Mr. Blatter has done. M. Mouse, for example?
Well, Pablo Escobar is dead. So, you know, I'm a little bit stumped at this point.
This is our rivalry show, so let us talk about rivalries. Have you a favorite among the many team rivalries that you've witnessed over the years?
You know, I think certainly the greatest individual rivalry I ever saw was Martina Navratilova and Chris Evert. Because they both changed not only their physical appearance, but their approach to the game to keep up with the other one. Among individual rivalries, I think that's certainly it. Among team sports, certainly the Celtics and the Lakers in the 1980s, and for that matter, the Celtics and the Lakers in the 1960s, I think are the ones that stay in my head.
I wonder how far back it's safe to go in this sort of discussion with our audience. If I were to say Mays versus Mantle versus Snyder, would everybody be looking at their radios and asking who?
No, everybody will be turning to the classic rock station to listen to Willie Mickey and the Duke. I think, and oddly enough, in that one, I think most people remember Willie Mays and most people remember Mickey Mantle, but I think most people would be really stumped as to who this Duke character was. A lot of rivalry is the way individuals feel about their teams. I mean, you can declare a rivalry with practically anybody. The Red Sox and the Tampa Bay Rays had a great rivalry for a few years. They kept throwing baseballs at each other's heads. That's sort of quieted down now. But you can have rivalries that don't stand the test of time, too.
You can find the sports writing of Charlie Pierce at Grantland, and he joins me each week on Only a Game as well. Thank you, Charlie.
There's also Greece and Troy, which we didn't get into.
Yeah, it was a good one.
That was a really good one, except they only played one away game.